Welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
I'm Javier.
We're back.
The boys are back in town.
That's right. We're back in business because I have a working computer again.
Yeah, it's this is not my fault. Here. None of this was my fault.
You're like Gene Snitsky. This is not your fault.
I'm the talent. I just show up. My talent was here. Talent was working. My computer was working.
My talent was sitting on the bench.
I was just chilling on the bench, not being used. I feel like probably how most of the rookies drafted in the NBA draft last night are feeling, which, yay, I was drafted, but no, I'm never going to see the minutes.
Never going to see the minutes. But we are back with another episode of Crossbody of Work. Now, a couple housekeeping notes.
Yes.
The episode that we were going to drop before my computer decided to just crap out entirely, which is the Ivory episode, that episode is lost into the annals of history
because
I had not finished editing it. It had not gone over into Megaphone, our podcast host, or into my external hard drive. So it is gone forever, which is very fun.
We'll do it again at some point, maybe.
It'll be something we laugh about, you know, a year
from
now.
We'll laugh about it for a couple.
Yes, the old Ivory episode.
Yeah, we'll laugh about it for a long time, and then we'll do it again.
And then we'll redo it and watch that terrible, fabulous Moolah match one more time.
No, we won't. So tell the people what we're doing now.
This is very exciting. This is another one of our three-parters. Part one on Stone Cold Steve Austin. We're covering Stone Cold before he was Stone Cold.
Yes, we're doing Stone Cold when he had hair.
Glorious hair. And yeah, Javier's currently doing the Hollywood Blondes taunt with the film camera.
This is the Austin that I love. I don't remember what WWE 2K game there was, but there was a Stone Cold mode. I think it was 2K16, because this is the one I have, because it was free. I did it, and I did the whole thing, and a lot of it is the Hollywood Blondes and Austin WCW. And honestly, that's what really got me into Austin in WCW, not Austin in general. I was already a Stone Cold fan when I was a kid. But
everybody should be a Stone Cold fan.
Yes, but just stunning Steve Austin, dude, was fun as shit. Like, yeah. He was actually really fun. I really liked the little camera thing. It got me into Brian Pillman, who I didn't even really know of up until I went back and looked at their Hollywood Blonde stuff, which we'll get into a little bit here. And yeah, Stone Cold, Stunning Steve, which is basically the entirety of this episode, is Stunning Steve Austin.
Yeah.
He's good. Damn good wrestler,
he's really
too.
Good. Now, we've seen this era of Steve Austin in some of our older episodes. Like, we have seen him in a War Games match in the Dustin Rhodes episode.
Yes.
We have seen him face Ricky Steamboat in an episode. And we know that, like, this era of Stone Cold, well, of Steve Austin was all about the fact that he was technically proficient. He was a talented mat guy. He could wrestle people and wrestle people really effectively.
Yeah, he was a talented SOB.
That's
you know,
true.
This was really. If you see the two versions of Steve Austin, which is really just Stone Cold and Stunning Steve, it's really night and day almost. It's kind of crazy to me what the knee injury, plural, knee injuries, I guess, really did to him as far as, you know, the way he was able to wrestle, because he really went from this technical savant, this grappler, this guy who really, in a lot of ways, was kind of like a throwback to 80s and early 90s, you know, grappling, proficient style wrestling, and then just kind of became a brawler. And he really ushered in this new era of, yeah, we don't really care about work rate anymore. We're just going to start to throw haymakers, tell a great story, and the people leave happy.
And this episode, we'll see the growth, because by the end, we're actually going to cover his brief stint in ECW, where it definitely wasn't about the in-ring work, as we'll get to that in the match. But the promo work, this is when Stone Cold really develops that voice that becomes the iconic voice of the 90s, truly, in Stone Cold Steve Austin. Before we get into all the matches and all the fun stuff, we have the usual housekeeping to get out of the way, which includes the fact that you should come write with us at fullpresswrestling.com. Check out all the writing on Full Press Wrestling. We're adding new writers frequently. Come join us and talk about wrestling. If you've got hot takes on wrestling, I love to hear them. We will definitely post them. Join us as the option to apply directly on the site. You should also, you know, follow us on Twitter at Crossbody of Work, and you should rate and subscribe. So you should subscribe to the podcast. I know if you're listening to us, you're probably wondering, hey, where do those episodes go? Follow us on Twitter. That's where we announced that my computer was shit. And we're back now, and you should, you know, follow us on Twitter so you're always keeping up to date with what's coming up and what's going on. But also, rate the pod. It would be greatly appreciated. Give us those 5 stars. That frog splash. Do it for us.
Speaking of frog splashes, we'll get to that one. There's a frog splash in this.
There is.
And it was stone cold.
Should we get into match number one?
Yeah, let's do match number one, because it honestly was... it may have been my favorite of the bunch.
Really? I'm intrigued by that. All right. So, like I mentioned, we're doing Steve Austin, and this is Steve Austin in WCW. Him versus Dustin Rhodes, who I mentioned earlier. Halloween Havoc 1991 for the Television Championship. Now, this is Steve Austin as a member of the Dangerous Alliance with Paulie Dangerously and Rick Rude and those guys. He's only 2 years into his wrestling career at this point.
Yeah.
He is fresh, and he is still so good.
Yeah, Stone Cold was freaking insane if you think about it. Like he
was a body guy too.
Yeah, kind of. I don't know.
He gets there.
Yeah, I don't think he's as much of a body guy as he is just someone. I feel like he is in the same vein as kind of like a Moxley. You know how Moxley's pretty big, but you don't think of him as a body guy. You know, I feel like there's a lot of guys in wrestling like that. Like Seth Rollins, he's pretty big, but he's not a body guy.
Do you remember when Moxley came back when he was Ambrose for the first time after the injury, and he was gigantic, and everyone was like, "What the fuck happened?"
Yeah, he hit the gym.
He hit the gym.
You know, yeah, no, it's one of those things where I don't think he was a body guy as much as he was, you know, big, but in like a kind of natural looking way.
Yeah, he didn't look out of place.
Yeah, like it really suited him to look like that. Now that said, I kind of like Beer Belly Austin later on.
That's what all the beer celebrations post match will do to you.
It is true. It's not as bad as it was later on in his career when he would really, you know, kind of look sometimes like he should wrestle with a shirt on.
And we'll get to that.
We will get to that. That's the last episode of this. Yeah. But yeah, no, at this stage of his career, he looks great. The hair is looking good. And let me tell you something about Lady Blossom. I don't know who she is, but Lady Blossom, how you doing?
So, Lady Blossom, who, if you don't watch the match, picture Scarlett Bordeaux's mom. Yeah, that's Lady Blossom.
That's probably why I am very attracted to this woman.
Pretty much looks like her. Lady Blossom was actually Steve Austin's second wife. They were married from 1992 to 1999.
Who was the first? Damn, Steve!
I don't remember who the first one. Third, obviously, was Deborah.
Steve's on his fourth wife right now, I think.
And I forget the name of his current... Kristen? I think it starts with a K. He always talks about her on the podcast.
I haven't listened to a Stone Cold podcast in a very long time.
He has some of the best for like long drives. I can sit and I feel like I'm just sitting in the truck with Stone Cold and whoever.
My thing is I have so many podcasts that I listen to that I just like... It's kind of like a schedule thing at this point. I can't really add more podcasts to the mix or else it gets really hectic.
I also feel that way, which, you know what? If you're listening to us and we're a part of your regular rotation... Thanks.
Thank you, everyone. Honestly, because I can't even fit us into our regular rotation.
I mean, you live it, so.
Yeah, I do live the podcast. But anyways, Stone Cold comes out. I'm going to call him Stone Cold, by the way, everybody, because that's just who he is.
It's just the way it is.
He's wearing like this purple robe that is just incredible. It's sparkly. Purple or maroon or one of those colors. I don't know. I'm not an art guy. It sparkles. It's better than any robe Ric Flair has ever worn. I'm just going to say that. And then he's got these trunks that just look amazing.
The trunks are incredible. I want them so bad. They are, you know, like the shitty material or like designs that are on like bus seats? It's like that as trunks. Or like that one, there's one American Alpha gear set that this kind of looks like. And I want these trunks so bad.
Yeah, it's one of those deals where, like, if I ever go to a beach in Italy, like, this is the thing I need to be wearing.
This is what people are wearing. Yeah.
This is what I have to wear when that happens. But, yeah, no, that happens. And then you've got Dustin Rhodes, who comes out in just, like, regular basic yellow trunks that are super baggy.
It looks like what he pretty much wore to the arena that day.
Yeah, basically. It honestly looks like an outfit that he'd go to sleep in. But regardless of the point... some technical work to start off the match. That was good. These guys are really good technical wrestlers. Dustin Rhodes was so good when he was in WCW.
Yeah, I said in my notes, Dustin really does earn the natural nickname. Like, he has been this good at chain wrestling and the nuts and bolts of a wrestling match for years, like decades.
Yeah, and it stinks because, like, he's one of those guys where you're just like, you think to yourself, why was he never a top guy? But at the same time, I just look at him and I'm like, yeah, he's not really a top guy. You know, he really was. I think his career really was at the level it should have been, like IC title guy, always in the mid card. Obviously, with the characters that he could pull off, yeah, it not only gave him more career longevity in the fact that he was able to milk off Goldust
versatility
for the longest time, but like he really did have a good career for himself. And honestly, I think it's the best case scenario for him. Obviously, there's a world out there where he doesn't get involved in drugs and alcohol, and he's able to, you know, have probably even more of a run a little bit into that 2002 to 2007 ish range. But yeah, I get it. Like, he's not a top guy, but we see this here, and it's like, damn, these two guys would be perfect to just like throw out there for like an Intercontinental Championship match.
And that's exactly why they're in the TV Championship, right? Because the TV Championship gets defended more often than every other title. That's the whole gimmick. And they're obviously going to be able to be the kind of guys who can go out there and have a quality match without a ton of story, right?
Yeah. And it's important to note, it's a TV title match. It's a 15-minute time limit.
Yeah. So it's a pretty quick match, but it is good.
Yeah, it's really good. Also, the stupid WCW rule is in place where if you get thrown over the top rope or whatever, or you go over the top rope, it's DQ. I'll never understand that. But
it's the dumbest rule I've ever heard of.
But, there's a clothesline spot like right at the beginning where Dusted clotheslined Austin out of the ring. But, I mean, they tried to explain it away by saying, yeah, he got clotheslined over, so it's not a disqualification.
I do like that it's like a young JR on the Austin match, because that is the wrestler-announcer pairing that matters most in all of wrestling history.
It really is. It really is. Like, just a by God!
What other ones fit? Like, what are other, like, announcer-wrestler pairings that matter?
Heenan and Flair, maybe? Or Heenan and Hogan? Or Heenan and a lot of the guys there in the early 90s? You know, maybe
as
much a Macho
as I
Man?
Don't like him, and I never liked him growing up. Michael Cole calls John Cena matches.
No.
Like, that sticks in my head. Yes.
No.
Yes, because they are staples of the era, man. Like, that's just
it's
the way
true.
It goes.
Like, I will say, it would be so weird. Like, here's the thing. Like, in my mind, I associate John Cena with Taz a lot because, like, he was on SmackDown when I really cared about him. So, like, I just associate Taz and Michael Cole with him, and it was a lot of Taz there. And, you know, that's the person I think of. Maybe, like, Lawler and any WWE female from the 2000s.
Yeah, unfortunately.
That's about it.
Also,
but, yeah,
also
it's
weirdly, JR and Kane for me. I love JR announcing, like, Kane doing wild shit. I mean, the man also lit JR on fire, so maybe that's part of it. But like,
maybe, like, Brett or Shawn with Vince, but I don't know. Whatever. Who cares? It's Austin and JR, and then it doesn't matter.
It is
that.
Austin, JR, and then everybody else. What are some spots you liked here?
There was a beautiful-looking German suplex early in the match by Austin. Like, it was technical as it gets. Austin, you know, Dustin Rhodes' finisher is the running bulldog, and he counters that pretty early on. Dustin hits a cross body for a near fall, like a flying one, I believe, off the top rope. And then Austin, at some point, just... I think Rhodes goes in and he tries to do another crossbody, like a flying one, and then he fucking just craters. Like, he just misses and he just fucking goes flying out of the ring. It's a terrible looking, like, it's a crazy bump.
Didn't look good, no.
And then Austin just starts going ham on the outside, just raining down the fist, and I'm like, all right, this is getting a little bit excessive. And then I realize that this is the child of Dusty Rhodes, so I understand why they're doing the thing when... Yeah. Literally 30 seconds later, you see Dustin bleeding like a stuffed pig.
Super bloody. I like at one point I don't know if it was before or after that, they trade inside cradles. For some reason, inside cradles and trading them is always funny to me.
Yeah, it's great.
That's a good strategy. I'm going to try it on you.
Yeah. Austin does a double axe handle off the top rope to the outside, which is like, all right, that's Stone Cold Steve Austin. What are we doing here?
Flying maneuver to the outside.
Yeah, and then at some point here, Lady Blossom gets involved, and she hits Dustin, and I was just like, you go, girl.
She slaps him repeatedly.
Yeah, I was very happy about that. And then we get a Dustin Rhodes, like, he recovers very quickly from that, by the way. Usually when there's interference, you're pretty much down for the count for the next couple minutes and Austin's going to be on top. No, my man recovered in like 20 seconds and he hits an atomic drop into a lariat. And every time I see an atomic drop now, I just think of Rick Rude. I just do. I love that Rick Rude account.
Yep, fair.
Austin gets, I don't know if this was intentional or not, but Austin gets tripped on the outside and he hits the barrier and he comes up bloody. And it kind of looked like legit. Like,
he legitimately did. I don't think it was planned.
Yeah, I don't think it was planned either.
If it was planned, good for them because it looked legitimate.
Yeah, it didn't look like a natural busting open spot. No. You know, like, you could see the stuff. Like, obviously, it was hard way bust with Dustin because of all the punches to that one area. But, like, when it came to this, I don't think it didn't look like a blade job because it didn't really seem like a blade pull. It kind of just looked like how my head looked when I was a kid and I busted it open on that door hinge playing basketball.
I like this.
It's the dumbest way anyone's ever busted their head open. I was literally playing with a hoop that you attach to the top of a door and a little foam ball. I went to pick up the ball after dunking it, and I hit my head on the door hinge, and I came up bloody. Not even a big door hinge either. It's literally like maybe 3 inches long. Like, it's super skinny too. It was so disappointing.
This is great because normally I share all the embarrassing shit that I do in my life on the pod. So this is good. I like.
All right. Also, I started. So my school is an exam school in high school. So you could go in and take the exam either sixth grade heading into seventh grade. So you start in seventh grade, or you could take it eighth grade heading into ninth grade and just do the normal 4 years. I got in seventh grade. So it's happened literally a month into me being at my new school where I knew nobody. And now I'm the kid who busted his head open on a fucking door hinge.
Let's go to the finish of the match. There was a classic Dustin power slam with like under 2 minutes, and the announcers are announcing how long until the match is complete. There's a bionic elbow by Dustin in the corner with 30 seconds remaining, roughly.
Here's the thing that I kind of liked. I like the swag. I like the cockiness, but like, you're kind of a dumbass for this. He does that power slam. It's a near fall, but he's counting along with the ref. Like, he's doing the pin with his hands. And then he does the bionic elbow and he does the same thing again. And it's like, are you really trying to win this match? Because you could just like kept
him
wrapped up.
You could be pushing
him
down.
But no, he hits a flying clothesline for a near fall. And I feel like, so Austin kicks out, right? And then the time runs out. I feel like they meant to have timed that better, but whoever the referee was, was that Nick Patrick?
Yeah.
Nick Patrick, he just kind of he did the pin a little too quick and it was like really weird, but they just kind of went with it. So yeah, Austin retained on the time limit draw.
The timing wasn't great. The match itself was really good.
Yeah, I really liked it. When it was done, I was kind of like disappointed that there wasn't a finisher, but I was like invested. Yeah. This was probably the only match of the bunch where I was like, from when the bell rang to when the bell rang for the finish, I was in 100%
the whole time.
Yeah, like, I was really into this.
Let's move to match two. Steve Austin moves to New Japan. Yes. This is from the G1 Climax. It's the second round because this year, which is 1992, the G1 Climax was a single elimination tournament. It is Steve Austin versus Kaiji Muto in a second round match, August 10th, 92. I knew that it would surprise Javier if he saw a New Japan match for Austin. How excited were you when you saw that it was going
to be? I was so excited. Oh my God, I love Kaiji Muto. He's one of my favorites. We're going to do an episode on him at some point soon-ish. But yeah, it's so cool to see this because he's the freaking legend and he's so good. And you saw it. The guy can work a hold on any sort of body spot. The Muto lock isn't even his and he's so good at it. But yeah, I was really excited to see this. And, you know, Austin went to the Tokyo Dome, brother.
He did. 5 stars in the Tokyo Dome, brother.
I wouldn't say this is a 5-star match, though.
Yeah, maybe not. So to get there, Austin beat Arn Anderson in round one, and Muto beat the world's sexiest wrestler, Barry Windham, according to my Twitter header, which is still there. And the little fun fact, the finals of this tournament was Masahiro Chono beating Rick Rude. Yeah. There's a lot of gaijins in one G1.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be that way a lot because of the working relationship with WCW and the NWA and stuff. But yeah, it really is one of those deals where I feel like as the G1 started going, they really needed a lot of bodies, and they just didn't have that. So, or they did, and they just in. It was a lot of like nobodies, and they didn't really want to like do tournaments with nobodies.
Especially if it's going to be a single elimination, like you can get guys if you don't have enough guys to make it like compelling matches for the first round. Like, why do the tournament at all?
Yeah, and this is also super, super cool because, like, Austin, like you mentioned, is only a couple years into his run in wrestling, period.
Yeah.
He's over here now. In the New Japan Dome, and it's crazy to think about the fact that, like, the only guy who's really ever been that way, you could say, is really just Will Ospreay. Like, Will Ospreay is kind of like the only gaijin who came over a couple years into his run in wrestling and was, like, really good.
Yeah. Because Austin is really good in this match.
Yeah. Yes, he is. I honestly, like, not Chono. I don't know why I thought of Chono. Muto? But the Muto is really, really over. Like, he's super over. And he is, like, hamming it up as far as, like, you know, the crowd and stuff to get reactions. And Austin is just working his ass off the whole time.
Yeah. I will say it's an interesting viewing experience because the link that we have has no commentary.
I didn't even notice that.
It's not even that it has no Japanese commentary, where you can kind of get inflections of voice or anything like that. It has no commentary whatsoever. And it's a very interesting experience because even though, you know, in the current era, we have been watching sports without fans and with a lot of crowd interaction, that hasn't really, they haven't gotten rid of announcers. They haven't gotten rid of commentators. This is the opposite. You can still hear crowd reaction, but there's nobody explaining anything to you.
Yeah.
And if you don't know how Japanese crowds work, like if I hadn't done the episodes on Tanahashi and Shibata and those guys, like I would be a little bit more confused because it's just a lot of polite applause. But you can tell they're like super into the match.
Yeah, honestly, I didn't even realize until this moment that you said there wasn't any commentary on this match. Like, to be fair, I'm also used to Japanese wrestling. Like, I watch a lot of it. I did watch pretty much the entirety of the G1, not live, but on delay basically, but like a couple hours, but I guess it's because of that. Like, I'm really coming off of watching basically a whole month's worth of G1 style wrestling and like super into watching these matches, and the commentary isn't like huge. It kind of just blends in with the crowd noise and the, you know, silent applause and everything. And the thing I love about Japan is that they do a really good job of not talking in spots that they don't have to talk in. Like they really just let it build and let the noise, like the natural noise, come in and stuff. It's honestly more of a sports experience. Like, you don't hear Joe Buck when Kyler Murray's dropping back to throw bombs, you know, like you don't you hear them Cole when the play's active. You can
see it on the WWE network.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about the actual match. First thing I noticed before the actual match started, Dusty Rhodes is in the crowd on the hard cam side. You can see Dusty, and
I didn't notice Dusty that always either.
He looks like an absolute rock star.
It's because he is a rock star. Dusty Rhodes is a rock star. He's the second. I feel like there are two guys that are rock stars in wrestling. One of them is Ric Flair, obviously.
Yep.
And the other one's Dusty, and it never makes any sense because Dusty is like the nicest person ever, and Flair is just like Flair. You could have told me was a member of the Rolling Stones, and I would have believed it. Like, you know, it's so weird. But yeah, early on in this match, you just get some good old fat, like the first like 5 to 7 minutes of this match, which only goes like 18-19 minutes.
Yeah,
it's not super long, but like it's just good old fashioned Japanese grappling. It's just Austin's trying to get a front face lock in, and basically Muto's trying to get a Muto lock in, which he does like 3 different times. Which is awesome. And yeah, it's basically just them trying to go back and forth with grappling. There's a lot of Austin trying to do leg takedowns and then doing the gator roll or flipping over him like he's an amateur wrestler style wrestler.
Yeah.
And getting the front face lock in. It never made sense to me why Austin wanted the front face lock, but then I realized who it was. It's fucking Stone Cold Steve Austin. The guy probably only knows how to put on a Boston Crab, which makes sense because at some point here he puts on a single leg Boston Crab. But yeah, it's funny because they really... It kind of exposes Austin, but also doesn't, because he does a good job of hiding his weaknesses, because it's a match centered around grappling, which is something that he's not very good at. He's not a submission-based guy. He's not a guy who, you know, can go out there and give you a technical match like a Bret Hart or like a Shawn Michaels or like a, you know, Mr. Perfect. He doesn't have a background like that. He's just a guy who is good at all good old-fashioned wrestling. He can give you some grabbing. He can tell a story while he does it. So to see him in this, and he's out of his element, and he freaking knocks it out of the park.
But he's thriving, yeah. And I think part of that has to do with Muto, who actually, like, when it was time to give Austin shine, gives it to him. But for the most part, especially the beginning part of the match, Muto is in control.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I think it was just, like, essentially, like, Muto put him in a cloverleaf of some sort. And he just starts, like, pumping up the crowd while he's doing it. And he's just cheering. He's like, come on! I like that. Because I was like, I felt like it was unnaturally quiet at that point, so it was nice to see what felt like good old-fashioned wrestling and somebody just, like, playing to the crowd and hamming it up a bit.
Yeah, and then it really starts getting a little bit exciting. You know, Muto starts hitting some striking combinations, and he finishes it off with a spinning back heel. Austin's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, what?
And then, you know, Muto goes for a moonsault, which I guess is his finisher, because he goes for it a couple times.
I guess so,
yeah. But he catches himself, because Austin rolls out of the way, so it's very much like the deal that Andrade does all the time, where he misses a moonsault, and then he goes for the second moonsault, except the second moonsault didn't happen, because Austin just, like, moved out of dodge completely. So he does that, he misses the moonsault, but he catches himself, and then he just drop kicks Austin immediately, like, one fell swoop kind of deal. And it's one of those things where it's like, we have an insane amount of talent in wrestling nowadays who could do this, like Ricochet, Mustafa Ali, like, a lot of guys like that could do this.
Six guys you see on Monday Night Raw.
I've never seen it happen, though. Missing a moonsault, landing on your feet, and then, like, immediately going into another move. There's always, like, a little setup. Muto just immediately dropkick.
Shows how impressive he was, especially doing this in 92.
Yeah, that's really cool. And then he launches himself over the rope, like, Macho Man style. I don't think that has a... I guess it's just a plancha.
I just wrote it as a plancha, and I thought it was good.
Yeah, and then Muto tries to... he does this, like, crazy flipping back elbow, like, super gymnastic type deal into the corner that I don't think anyone really does outside of maybe the women. I think Dana Brooke might do something like this, but that's it looked really freaking cool. And I mean, he tries to do it on the outside. Austin moves out of the way and he hits the barrier, which really is the point of the match where Austin's finally
Austin finally gets in control. Yeah,
which is crazy because we're like 15 minutes in at this point.
And he had some offense, like he wasn't entirely getting dominated, but he finally gets like control of the match. I don't like it because we have talked on this podcast about our dislike of bear hugs.
Yeah.
And Austin does like a Dominator vice, essentially.
It's a
Dominator.
I believe.
They call it something else in another match.
Yeah,
the
body vice. Yeah.
They call it a body vice. I hated it.
It's
because it just felt like such a stall. Like it was like it is a rest hold. That looks like a rest hold, because rest holds are effective when they don't look that way.
Right? I will say, I thought it was fine, because it looked kind of cool. Because though it's not a normal bear hug.
It did look cool when Muto flipped out of it, it looked cool.
Yeah, it's also not a bear hug, you know? It's one of those, he's just literally draped over his shoulder, and Austin squeezing the hell out. Like, I feel like that would actually suck to take. Like,
I don't want to do it, but...
Yeah, it's like a shitty rest spot, because like, your body's like folded over, breathing gets difficult in that position, and also, it's like... You're getting squeezed. Like, it's something I could legitimately see being, like, a move that actually sucks.
Yeah, it still felt like a rest. Like, it felt longer than it probably lasted.
Yeah.
For me, just because it was like, okay, come on, let's do something.
Yeah, and then Austin starts talking shit. And honestly, when Austin starts talking shit, I'm here. Like, this is all I needed.
It's great. It's always great.
It didn't last long, as you can expect, because whenever the heel starts talking shit, the babyface gets his licks back in. Muto hits a bulldog. He misses a flying sitting senton, though, which was like, shit, that must suck, because the Japanese rings are hard.
Yeah, he's landing, and his tailbone is now, like, a couple rings up his
spine. Yeah, and his neck, he has to, like, snap back on it a little bit, so his neck is, oh, man. And Austin goes for a frog splash.
Yeah, and nobody home.
And then Muto, I feel like this was supposed to be the finish of the match, because the finish comes, like, right after
100%.
This. 100%. And Muto goes, and he botches just climbing up to the top rope. And I mean, just like, fuck it, audible, I'm throwing myself out of the ring.
Yeah, just eats it, but then eventually does get up to the top rope, hits the moonsault, gets the three count, moves on in the G1, because, yeah, this is the single elimination G1. I really think that was supposed to be the finish, and just he just fucking bailed.
It's hilarious, though. It's one of those botches where it didn't actually ruin the match, but it's one of those things super memorable, because it's like, how do you botch climbing up to the top rope?
We've seen you do so much more impressive things in this one match, and you fucked up this.
He's done it multiple times in this match, too, because he's come off the top rope a lot.
I will say, we are now entering the winter seasons in our part of the world. Seeing people fall on ice is the funniest fucking thing.
We have no ice yet. We've had snow. I had one snowfall like a couple weeks ago. That was pretty heavy too. But no ice yet. No ice.
It's still funny when people fall on ice every fucking time.
Are you basically trying to do the thing where in the game Among Us, if you're the imposter, you kill someone and then you self-report? Are you trying to self-report, Evan? Are you the one that always falls in
ice? I fall at least once a year.
Oh.
Like, without fail. Normally, it's getting out of my car. I will fall at least once a year. I haven't broken anything on a fall, knocking on wood currently. But, I remember one time we saw on the walk home from high school, it was probably in, like, grade 10, we noticed a particularly bad patch of ice on the walk home. So we got we sat at the picnic table that was nearby, because it was right by the gas station on the walk home. And we just watched people, and at least seven people fell. This is one of the highlights of high school.
Oh, man. Everyone, keep it in your taps now. Evan's going to be out of commission for like 2 to 3 weeks.
I'm going
to
miss at least one more episode when I break an arm doing the...
He's going to break his fucking tailbone getting out of his car.
I probably will. Let's take our first commercial break. When we get back, we're looking at the Hollywood Blondes. Back from the break, and now we're going into Tag Team Steve Austin. This is the Hollywood Blondes era Steve Austin, where he is with Flying Brian Pillman as one half of the Hollywood Blondes. What a good young pairing of guys. Like, two just talented wrestlers, let's throw them together.
Yeah, this is honestly one of those deals. Like, it might be the best example of guys just randomly thrown together in a primetime spot, and then they just knock it out of the park. Like, they just knocked it out of the park. And it's two, relatively inexperienced guys, if you really think about it. Only been around for a handful of years. Flying Brian was with the Bengals a couple years before this. Like, it's one of those deals where it was crazy. Like, how many teams can you think about that were like relatively young in the grand scheme of things and just thrown together and then they made it work? I mean, maybe the Shield, but I don't even know if they count, because two of their guys were big independent wrestlers and then went to NXT or FCW. I mean, Roman Reigns is really the only one that wasn't.
Yeah.
But aside from that, I can't even think of one.
You often see young tag teams that are good, but they've been tag teams before, or guys who are established being thrown together and they're good, like Sheamus and Cesaro.
Yeah. Like,
but then again,
can't really
I think Cesaro
like...
could be tag partners with me. And we'd win.
Yeah, like, it's not really one of those deals. Like, you can't say, like, Private Party, because they've been a tag team pretty much their whole career. Like, you can't say guys like that who've been established as one. Like, these guys were just thrown together, already established. Yeah. Like, Austin was with the Dangerous Alliance and stuff like that. And yeah, obviously...
Pillman had been doing it for a couple years already. He started in 86.
Yeah, but it's still one of those deals where, like, they're so young. so young. They're in their mid-20s, basically.
Speaking of thrown together teams, this match we're watching is the Hollywood Blondes versus what feels like one of the most random
it
teams
is the most random
you can
team.
Think of. It is Ricky Steamboat and Shane Douglas. Now, this is such a jarring pairing because, by all accounts, Ricky Steamboat is one of the purest, nicest baby faces, both on camera and in the ring and in person, in all of wrestling. Ricky Steamboat has had nobody say anything bad about him. He's like a living legend of positivity.
And Shane Douglas can't say the same.
And Shane Douglas isn't. I don't see the appeal in Shane Douglas. He has never done anything for me. This match, I thought he was pretty good.
I will say this match, he was probably my favorite person in it. Of the four, I think he had the best performance.
But I didn't understand franchise era Shane Douglas. I have seen Dean Douglas since in ECW or WWF, and that was bad.
Yeah, I will say, actually, no, I take it back. The best part about this match was Bobby Heenan on commentary. We will get to that. But, the match starts off with Steamboat and Austin, and Austin immediately tries to be mad aggressive. He tries going in, throwing punches, all this stuff. He gets a couple of licks in, but then Steve-O puts him in the pinning cycle.
Yeah.
And it's just like, there was actually one fall where it was like super close, and it was just like, okay, now we are doing this. And then it really just becomes your bog standard tag match, you know, from this era where it really just becomes like the heels kind of try to get on top, but they can't because the baby faces are really good. And then we get something that I like almost never see, which is the heels. Like, there's a lot of heat on Brian Pillman at one point here. And the baby faces are just tagging in and out quickly, in quick succession. They're getting some licks in, tagging out immediately. Getting some licks in, tagging out immediately. It was really, really cool. And that one succession where you really see Douglas and Steamboat just tag in and out, in and out, in and out.
Like, at least 8 or 9 times.
Yeah, it's a lot. I think that might be my favorite part of the match. That was just such a good little period there where they were really getting it going. And it isn't really until Pillman fakes a knee injury that they're able to, like, get their stuff in. Because Pillman faked a knee injury after getting absolutely worked on. And he tries to do this deal where he fakes the injury and then he comes in for a flying clothesline. But Douglas just isn't happening. Like, he's just not having it at all. So when he goes in for the clothesline, Douglas just takes him and power slams the ever-loving crap out of him. And Pillman's just like, I'm out.
Eventually, the heels do get in control, and I really liked them because they were really good at being sneaky, and it's something we're going to see in the next Hollywood Blondes match we watch, too. The Blondes were excellent at the one person distract, the typical heel tag team chemistry thing of, like, one person distract or get the other babyface to come charging in. The ref deals with him. Let's get our cheap licks in. And they were doing that to really work over Steamboat, who, again, we saw this, or we've seen this before when we see Steamboat on the pod. An excellent babyface.
So good.
Again, makes for an excellent babyface in peril.
Yeah, he really is. I do have to say there's a quote here. Right after that power slam spot, I think it was, where Pillman faked the knee injury, you get a quote from Heenan. And so they're talking about how Douglas has a master's degree. And Heenan goes, Rush Limbaugh degree of conservatism. And then Jim Ross, I believe, goes something like, I think Rush Limbaugh is actually a fan of WCW. And then Heenan goes, aw, Ross, don't make me throw up. I love Bobby the Brain Heenan. Bobby the Brain Heenan's amazing. And also, fuck Rush Limbaugh.
Absolutely. Fuck Rush Limbaugh. That's an easy take on this spot. That's money every time.
And then we get, before the heels thing, which we were talking about earlier, we get like a little nice little run from Shane Douglas where he is just going ham on Steve Austin, and it's just like, my one note was just, Douglas is mad exciting right now. And honestly, he's the franchise, he's the main event player. Give me everything. Like, if you tell me coming out of this match that he is going to like beat Ric Flair or Sting or whoever the hell is WCW champion at this point, I would be like, yeah, screw it.
Sure, I'm on board,
I'm in.
As much as I don't understand the appeal of Shane Douglas from what I've seen of him, like, I didn't like him when he was in ECW. I don't think he is as good a wrestler as he was pushed to be at certain areas. And I think also injuries derailed him a little bit. Here, with the tassels on the boots in the early 90s, he's killing it.
Yeah, he's killing it. And then we get to the spot where the Hollywood Blondes are heels.
That's the best way to describe it. They're just heels.
I can't even describe heels. You one sequence either. They're just heels. Like, that's just what it is.
They're just being dicks.
And then, Austin puts on that body vice that you hate so much, but I kind of like, you know, Steamboat moves and Pillman takes out Austin at one point. They like have him set up, and that was kind of a really cool spot. And then because they're really working over Steamboat. Steamboat was the guy that was getting all the heat on him. And then we get the hot attack to Shane Douglas.
Excellent hot tag.
He comes in.
A fantastic
hot tag. It's very basic. He comes in, he hits them both with punches, hits them both with kicks, hits them both with clotheslines. And that's really it. But it's super exciting. The crowd's super behind it.
Exactly.
But he almost trips on Austin celebrating the hot tag. Like, he does trip.
Oh, I didn't
see
that.
Whoa, but he catches himself while he's celebrating. And if he had fallen there, I would have died laughing. That would have been it. That would have been the end of this. Just the Shane Douglas, give him the world title push for me. Honestly,
what's your favorite botch?
Oh,
like, in all wrestling?
My God, 92 Royal Rumble, Macho Man Randy Savage jumping over the top rope and eliminating himself.
Yeah, that's
the best one. It's just the best one. It just is. I mean, the Shockmaster, I guess, is like
the Shockmaster makes me laugh in a way that I can't quite. It just brings me so much joy. And I think what it is because we all love to plan and we have grand ideas,
yeah,
for where things should go, and to have that much idea and build up about who this man's going to be, and for it to just his fucking glitter stormtrooper helmet to fall off. Like, what's the to me my thinking is, what's the long game with the Shockmaster?
I don't even know
if that debut works. Do you see what he was dressed as?
Like, I think the whole deal there was he was going to be one of the guys in Team Sting or whatever for, what was it, War Games? Yeah. Maybe
it was War Games War Games.
It's whatever. It doesn't matter. All the glittery stormtrooper fell and his helmet came off. Like, that's hilarious to me. But it's so just not funny. Macho Man jumping over the top rope to eliminate himself from the greatest Royal Rumble of all time. Like, it's just
underrated
not.
One. I don't remember which year it was, but the Elimination Chamber match for the IC title where Mark Henry's pod broke.
Oh my God, Mark Henry a couple years ago when he throws what's his face over his head.
It was some quality botches. Anyways, the match was good. We got to get to the finish.
Yeah, right. Literally right after he almost trips. Austin goes, grabs the belt, hits Douglas with it. Ref sees it, disqualification.
And then the Hollywood Blondes run away with the belts.
Yeah.
Because why not? Because then they would actually win them a couple weeks later, which leads us to our next match, which is the Hollywood Blondes defending the, at this point, unified NWA WCW Tag Team Championships against Ric Flair and Arn Anderson in a 2 out of 3 falls match. That's right. Hollywood Blondes versus the Horsemen.
I just have to say this right now. This has got to be the dumbest build to a match of all time. Like, this is worse than the Japanese hair shampoo commercial between Edge and Booker T. This happened because on stupid Ric Flair's show, the show, air quotes, that he has, the talk show, whatever, yeah, the Flair for the Gold, they were making fun of them and calling them old, and they were like, it's Flair for the Old and stuff like that. And I guess that is enough to make a feud that's worthy of a 2 out of 3 falls match for the fucking unified WCW tag team titles.
And the best is that it was actually the Horsemen who said, we want to make it 2 out of 3 falls.
Yeah, it's
like, they're like, we want to make it the old fashioned way. And it's like, they're already making fun of you for being old.
Like, it's like, whatever, let's just do this. But the match starts off excellent. I mean, Flying Brian and I believe Arn start off the match, and Flying Brian, before they even touch, is just mimicking Ric Flair. He's doing the strut.
He does the Flair walk.
He's doing the woo.
He mocks that his back hurts.
It's excellent. It really is.
Overall, like, we've covered Arn in this pod, as we should. He's an excellent man.
Awesome. We might even do an Arn rewind at some point here.
We should. The amount of sauce in one match right here. Pillman is probably like nearing his peak as a performer.
Yeah, like, no, he's almost
doing
there.
Doing really well. Ric Flair is still excellent at this point. Arn's still Arn. That man will be Arn. He could deliver a spine buster.
Yeah, up until he retired, he was still Arn Anderson.
And the fact, like, the Hollywood Blondes as a unit here are really good. Like, they've got matching gear at this point. For some reason, during the announcement for the match, they say they have had over 100 defenses, and we love lying in wrestling.
Yeah, I will say, like, they're such effective heels that they made me actually like Ric Flair. Like,
that's a big thing to happen.
Like, what the fuck is likable about Ric Flair? Like, there just isn't anything.
Now he's like a crazy grandpa that you don't have, but you see your friend have that grandpa, and you're like, he looks insane. I want to hang out with him.
But at the same time, it's also like,
wow, he's really saying that? Oh, wow.
Hey, okay. Yeah, he's like one of those grandpas where you're just like, him in like 2-minute bursts, awesome. Once we get to three.
Yeah. He's already said something problematic.
Yeah, he's already said something that made me want to leave the house. But anyways, yeah, no, let's talk about, first off, I don't know if they did this on purpose, but I'm going to just say that they did, to give credit to Arn Anderson here. So the whole thing with this match is like, they're like, oh, you guys are old, right? Arn Anderson's wearing some fucking tidy whiteys. Like, my dad wears those to go to sleep every night. My father, to this day, my father, God bless his soul, he's going to be 60 next year. He still wears tighty whities that are baggy as all hell to go to sleep. Just the tighty whities. That's it. It's hilarious.
And that's what Arn's already dressed like.
Father, if you're listening to this, which I know you're not, I'm sorry.
Oh. But I love it. So we talked about how Pillman and Flair are the ones who start. Eventually, Arn gets tagged in.
Pillman and Arn start, and he's making fun of Flair.
Oh, right.
Arn forces a tag to Austin because he wants to start beating on Austin's ass because he's been beating too much Pillman ass. I loved it.
And then we do get the tag to Flair. So we've got Flair-Austin, which is a dream match. Like that, yeah. Flair at his peak and Austin at his peak is a dream match. But this is, you know, two ships converging in the night, but they are missing each other in terms of like where the peak is. Austin's still 5 years away, 6 years away.
He's not there as a character yet.
Flair is potentially on the downswing of his second really good run at this point.
Yeah.
And then he'll come back up for a couple more. But interesting to see at this level, at this, you know, stage of their career.
Although I will say, like, what does a peak Austin versus peak Flair match look like? Because they don't really have styles that make sense together, you know? I would love to see the reaction. Don't get me wrong. Crazy heel heat Flair and super babyface Steve Austin. Like, the crowds would be eating it up like crazy. But, like, I just can't imagine a match that goes, like, 30, 40 minutes between those two. And that's kind of the match that Ric Flair needs to have.
I think it would essentially be, like, amazing promos and then a quality 20, maybe 22-minute match.
Eh?
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe if you give me, like, grappling version Stone Cold Steve Austin, but still let it be Stone Cold Steve Austin, maybe. But, like, I just don't see how those two could have had a good match with peak Austin.
Now, in this, they do have a good match, but mainly because it's just quality tag team wrestling.
It's Flair beating ass. Let's call it what it is. Flair is booked like fucking Superman in this match. There is not a single point in this match where Ric Flair looks weak. He is coming in. He's the one getting the hot tags the whole time because Arn is the one eating all of the heat. And every time Flair comes in, the crowd erupts. And every time Flair comes in, he takes them both on. He takes both Austin and Pillman on. And he is on top. He is chopping everyone. He's wooing. He's doing the thing. Ric Flair is Hulk Hogan right now.
He's become everything he hated.
It's so cool because there's like a DDP. Or it's DDP. There's a DDT at one point that Arn hits. Wow, Steve Austin's doing the little camera roll thing.
I loved it because Austin went for a leg drop on the rope, missed, and then just still does the film taunt, and there's no
reason for it.
He does it for maybe a second, and then Anderson's like, the fuck did you say?
Yeah, there's no reason for it. And this obviously all comes after Pillman starts choking Arn with a little like hand towel that he has with him for some reason, which he does a couple times this match, and it's always Arn.
That's great.
Why does it feel like it's always Arn? There's probably is a Flair spot in there, but it doesn't matter. Flair just starts beating ass. Like, that's just all he does in this match. Just starts beating ass. And then Arn hurts his knee at one point here. Flair hits. So Arn hurts his knee. He tags out. Flair comes in. He takes out Austin, I think. And then he hits a flying forearm to Pillman.
To Pillman, yeah.
And he gets the three count on that because...
On a forearm,
A flying forearm because Austin's being held, like, at the apron by Arn from the outside. So he's not able to break it up. But it's so weird to me because a flying forearm is enough to put down Brian Pillman for a three count?
I liken it to Survivor Series, which this episode's going to come out the day before Survivor Series. I liken it to how in a Survivor Series, like... It doesn't matter. Like, you are weaker. Like, you start at yellow health. Everybody does.
I guess.
So, I guess 2 out of 3, I guess you're just a little bit weaker. The thing that I'm weirded out by is if you listen to the audio, it sounds like Buffer announces Flair and Anderson as the winners to the arena.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. To be fair, it wouldn't shock me if Buffer did that because Buffer botches.
I thought, like, maybe is it, like, are you protecting the outcome before it happens on TV? But, like, this is a Clash of the Champions. Like, this is live.
This is TV.
Yeah. This is Clash of the Champions 23, by the way.
Yeah, it's 23. Was it 22 the one that has Dustin and... Am I messing that up? What was 22? Clash of the Champions 22 was one of these matches.
22 was Steamboat and Douglas.
There we go. Yeah. I messed that up. Anyways, Yeah, at one point after that, you know, the first fall, Flair and Pillman just start exchanging chops. And then, yeah, I was right here with the towel spot. Pillman just chokes Flair during a double team sequence. It's kind of hilarious. And then Arn hits a goddamn spine buster.
And it fills our soul.
Yes, that filled my soul. That put me on the green health. Pillman makes
a lot of
save.
A lot of the focus in the second fall is on Anderson's knee.
Yeah.
Like, that's where the Hollywood Blondes really focused their energy. And I thought they were doing a good job of creatively continuing to work over the knee. I especially liked when they would be in a Boston Crab, Pillman would be in the Crab, and Austin is just helping by pushing down on Pillman's head.
Yeah, that was really
good.
To
give him more leverage. I was like, that, I've never seen that before. Like, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, I've still, to this day, I've never seen that. It's amazing. It's something that should be happening.
I was so confused. I thought he was just trying to get Pillman's attention at first.
Give me
Jericho. And then he's
like,
oh, he's helping.
Give me Jericho and MJF in a match, and Jericho puts on the Walls of Jericho, and MJF is just sort of, like, pushing his head down. Give it to me. Give it to me. But anyways, yeah, no. There's a good chop block at some point there to Arn's knee. Flair does get a hot tag, though. And he starts going wild again. It's like his fourth hot tag in the match. he sends flying Brian Pillman over the top rope, which should have been a DQ per WCW rules.
Should have been a DQ. It absolutely should have been.
It wasn't. And we find out why, like, 2 seconds later. Because Barry Windham, your boy, comes running out there.
Why the fuck is super sexy Barry Windham always here? Listen, I can't get anything done if he keeps showing up in these matches.
And
I'm just trying, like, I'm trying to watch these matches in the comfort of my own home with my fiance next to me, and I want her to stay with me. But if she keeps seeing super sexy Barry Windham, I'm gonna lose her. I can't have that.
Here's the thing; it's even funnier. He comes out, and he's wearing this, like, leather hat, the leather hat that Shawn Michaels would always wear. He's wearing, like, this biker leather jacket with all these, like, chains on it and stuff. It's like, damn, Barry Windham's looking real hot right now.
Barry Windham hit up Hot Topic before this.
Barry Windham's looking real good. But, yeah, he hits a double axe handle to Flair, and, I mean, he just starts beating on his ass, and DQ, the match is over. No title change because it was a DQ.
Because the second fall was a DQ. So it really does show that the Horsemen, their idea of making a 2 or 3 falls match, bit them in the ass twice.
Yeah.
Because they won the first fall, they would have been champions. And then on the second fall, they got a DQ win and they weren't allowed to become champions.
Yeah, it's just hilarious. And then fucking Paul Roma.
The newest Horseman, Paul Roma.
Paul Roma. That's it. I don't know why I kept wanting to say Roma. Paul Roma of Power Glory fame, mind you.
Yes.
Is now a Horseman. I was so confused when I heard that.
And he's got a great mullet. He brings a mullet to the team, and he comes into even the odds in street clothes.
You know what? We've got sexy Barry Windham. We've got Power and Glory's Paul Roma just randomly being in the Horsemen and me never knowing about it. We've got Hollywood Blondes still the champions. We've got Arn and Tidy Whiteys. I think we should just go to break right now.
Stupid sexy Barry Windham. Yeah, let's take a break. When we get back, we're looking at Steve Austin in ECW. Back from the break, and Austin would have a little bit longer of a career in WCW. He'd last until mid-1995 in the company. He would have a couple more United States Championship runs. He wanted to get back together as a tag team with Brian Pillman because the Hollywood Blondes only lasted, I think, a little over a year, maybe a little more.
Yeah.
But in 1995, he suffers a triceps injury in a tour in Japan and is then promptly fired over the phone by one Eric Bischoff. He found Austin both hard to work with, and he did not think that Austin was a marketable star. Everyone pause and laugh at Eric Bischoff.
This is the part where we throw our head back and laugh.
Exactly. He was fired over the phone by Bischoff. And so what happens after this is Paul Heyman, who is now in charge of ECW, Extreme Championship Wrestling, formerly Eastern Championship Wrestling, was Austin's manager as part of the Dangerous Alliance, obviously, because he was Paul E. Dangerously. Heyman came in or allowed Austin to come in at first just to cut promos because he wasn't ready. He hadn't recovered yet from the injury. So he was just to cut promos because Heyman said that he knew that Austin could cut promos if he had the chains off him, essentially.
Yeah.
This promo, which is, I think, the promo of Austin in ECW, is one of my favorite promos I have ever listened to in my life.
It's so good.
This is the beginning of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
You can hear it in his voice.
Yeah, you could hear the cadence, the raspiness of it, honestly, at some point here, I'm surprised he didn't say, give me a hell yeah. Like, it was so, I was ready all for there.
I was ready for a catchphrase.
The first half of it is just Austin completely burying WCW, just completely burying it. He's doing a Dusty voice in there.
Because Dusty is the booker at that point.
Yeah, he would pitch ideas to Dusty, and Dusty would turn him down. You know, he started sounding down, too. Like, you could tell his emotions were really coming in because, you know, he was, like, pitching, like you said, Brian Pillman, let's get back to Hollywood Browns. And he was like, oh, brother, no, baby, we don't want that right now. We don't see you at that level right now.
And he said he pitched opportunities with Sting, with Savage, with Hogan, and then they didn't do anything. And then he said, what they told him was, we're going to put the U.S. title on you, make you number one contender. And then he lashes out and he's like, well, all that shit never happened.
Yeah. Just bury WCW, Steve. Just do it. And then there's an excellent quote that he has where he goes, they say you are what you eat, and WCW didn't feed me anything but garbage, so I saw myself as garbage.
So I became garbage.
Yeah, so I became garbage. It's just awesome. It just
WCW
is.
WCW paying me a bunch of money to go out there and give Bagwell a hell of a match, which I just love because it's a dig on.
Yeah, screw Bagwell. Screw Marcus Bagwell. He sucks.
Help the German kid, which I believe to be The Wall?
I don't know.
Maybe. Then he starts talking about how good he... So I love promos where you not only air your grievances, because like those are great. We all love the pipe bomb, whatever. No, you shouldn't just focus on the grievances, but also why it should be you.
Yeah.
Sell us on why it should be you. So as much as you say, like, I should have gotten these opportunities, I should have been booked with Sting, I should have been booked with Hogan, you got to sell us on why. And the whole second half of this promo is selling the why.
Yeah.
And it's really good.
He talks about how when Eric Bischoff called him and fired him, he was like, he immediately got on the phone and he was hearing from New Japan Pro Wrestling, from the WWF, from All Japan, from ECW. And, you know, it basically became a bidding war. And whoever the owner of ECW was, I don't know who it was.
Todd Gordon.
Yeah, Todd Gordon gave the right number and he was there.
Mortgaged his house to get Austin in here.
Yeah, it was really good. And, like, shit, I was just looking at this. Like, this guy's a fucking $1 million. Like, this is a top star right here. You know, he talks about ECW and how it's the land of trash and, you know, violent
it's all violent
wrestling.
Crap.
Yeah, violent crap. And first off, he buries everyone under the sun, but nothing mattered because I heard Stevie Richards' name and I was just all in. That's all I cared about. I heard Stevie Richards and I just thought, I love Stevie Richards. And why didn't I get Steve Austin against Stevie Richards? This is very important. This is a dream match for me. Give me Stone Cold Steve Austin against Stevie Richards. It could still happen.
One thing I loved is he mentions, after he kind of talks about how the wrestling was garbage, he mentions by name Eddie Guerrero and Dean Malenko and their send-off match, which we covered way back once upon a time.
Yeah.
And I think in the Eddie Guerrero episode, the Dean episode.
Yep.
And he talks about how Eddie and Dean got this big send-off, and there were tears in the eyes of them in the crowd, and Austin got no send-off at all. And that's what's driving him, is that they don't care.
Yeah, they
have made a mistake. And so he says, no one here can hold me back. I am going to be the superstar I always knew I could be. It's just
awesome.
Good. It hits all the notes. And a thing that is surprisingly effective about it is the camera work. It feels like Austin is like in your space.
Yeah, they filmed it himself.
He's framed really interestingly. Like, a lot of the shots are just his eyes. And Austin can sell things with his eyes because he is an intense man.
It's the video is just so rainy. It's not good. You know, it definitely looked like he filmed it with some crappy camera that he bought at like CVS for like $30. It's not, it just doesn't really, it doesn't scream out quality, and that helps it. It's the grunge feel. It's it's one of those things where you just look at it. It's a YouTube video and it's just perfect. Everything about it is just perfect.
And it leads into our last match of this episode. So Steve Austin challenges underdog Mikey Whipwreck for the ECW Championship at November to Remember 1995. This was originally supposed to be Sandman versus Mikey Whipwreck. Austin whoops Sandman's ass in the entryway before the match can get started and has it so their EMTs, which they call damage control, very funny, have to come out and help Sandman to the back. Now, how much do you know about Mikey Whipwreck?
you called him an underdog, but he's the ECW champion. So I was like, how the fuck is he an underdog?
So Mikey Whipwreck originally was part of the, I believe when it was still Eastern Championship Wrestling, Ring Crew. And what they would do on the Ring Crew is one of the benefits was that once the ring is set up, you can go around and fuck around in the ring. And I guess Joey Styles noticed that Whipwreck was like pretty decent and hit it, like doing some good bumps and making some good moves. And Styles suggested to Heyman that he use him. And so he had, you know, practiced and done some things, but he hadn't really been trained. So Heyman got Mick Foley to train him. And he came into ECW as like a classic underdog babyface, won the Observer Rookie of the Year in 94, and would be booked as like somebody who kind of falls into situations, but like tries his hardest. And that's kind of what colors the view of the match that we watch. He beat Sandman for the title in a ladder match. That's how he won the ECW championship.
Good for him.
Was climbing up the ladder. But a lot of his wins are fluky. It's very much as if, like, if Daniel Bryan had no talent. And I'm not saying that Mike Whipwreck isn't a talented wrestler because he really developed over time. But the way that he was initially booked was like, just this guy who loves wrestling and he's going to try and he kind of falls into it, but he gets it done.
Yeah.
And the other thing about Mikey Whipwreck, he did make a run to in WCW 99 and then it didn't go well. So he went back to ECW and he helped close it out in 2001. He would kind of wrestle sporadically on the indies. He has had a good legacy of people he's trained since then. He has trained Curt Hawkins, Zack Ryder, Trent, Jay Lethal, and a couple others.
Whoa.
that's some world champions. It's an IC champion. Like,
yeah, those are some top
good.
Guys.
That's a pretty good legacy.
Future
yeah.
world champions there too. Trent.
Trent, future world champion?
I think Trent will be a future world champion. Trent is a big guy. Like, he honestly, New Japan was actually one of the things that damaged the relationship between the elite guys and New Japan Pro Wrestling was the fact that they took Trent from them because they were really starting to give Trent a big push. They were going to push him towards, you know, the United States IC title scene and possibly even further. They had really big plans for Trent over there in New Japan.
Interesting. So like I said, this match, Mike Whipwreck is the champion. Austin whoops Sandman's ass in the entryway and calls out Whipwreck. And also on his way out, after he beats up Sandman, he does crack a beer from the crowd and like, origin story.
Yes, this is awesome. Austin, like, my first note on this is Austin doesn't care at all. We love it. And we do. Yep. Like, here's the thing. Like, Stone Cold Steve Austin just doesn't give a shit. Like, that's the thing that I love most about Stone Cold is that, like, it's just the badass aura, the fucking big dick energy that he has at all times. Like, that is just Stone Cold Steve Austin.
And when Austin's in the ring and he calls out Mikey Whipwreck and Whipwreck's music hits, just there's a woman behind Austin in the crowd who's absolutely vibing. You'll see it. You can't miss it. She's just like back there just yes. hitting her moves. And I'm like, yes, Philadelphia
is
lady.
Is that you?
Yes, it was me in the time traveling. Yeah.
My favorite thing about this is when he has the mic right before the match is about to start, he goes, "My name is Steve Austin, and for tonight, and tonight for a very short while, your name is Eric Bischoff." And then the bell
he
rings.
He was consistently and openly taking the piss out of everyone in WCW.
Yeah, and then the bell rings. Austin pounces on him, immediately just starts beating his ass all over the place. Just
what's my favorite is he's telling Whipwreck to leave the ring so he can be properly introduced. And Whipwreck, like kind of the dorky guy he is like, whatever, like I'll leave. And he's trying to leave the ring, and Austin's like jumps him from behind.
Yeah. He just starts to, this is really, you're not even kidding when this is really the early iterations of Stone Cold, even just yep. wrestling. Like, it's just punches, it's kicks, it's stomps, it's all the stuff that we know of Stone Cold, because he's not a grappler. He's fucking Stone Cold Steve Austin.
It is also a big boot and a leg drop that,
yeah, because the fans start chanting Hogan at him to piss him off. And
I love
just
that. Well, he totally did it to take the piss out of Hogan. Because, like, why not do his move better than he does and have people kick out of it?
Yeah, That's great. Funniest thing is right after that, Joey Styles is on commentary and goes, "That lame man crap ain't going to work here."
Joey Styles always knows exactly what's going on, always knows the thing to say. This is the match of all the matches, because at one point, because Austin at first is wrestling in, like, an orange t-shirt.
Yeah.
When he takes it off, this is the match where I'm like, shit, Austin's ripped.
Yeah, I mean, like, it makes sense. He's coming off of an injury. He's really just working on his body the whole time.
He's no Barry Windham. Let's get one thing straight. But
still got the long hair. You can see the hairline receding a lot. But,
you can't see it at this point, yeah.
But yeah, no, it's still luscious blonde hair. But yeah, I mean, he's just beating his ass on the outside after that leg drop spot, and he goes for an Irish whip onto the barriers. Mikey reverses it, and that's really when we start to see Mikey Whipwreck get some life back in him. He starts throwing some punches.
A little bit, yeah.
Throws Austin back in the ring. Austin hits this stun gun, though. But then he takes like a solid 10 seconds to make the cover. And in that time, Mikey is able to get his bearings and he kicks out. And at some point, I love the finish. I absolutely love the finish. I'm going to let you be the one to describe it because you're the ECW guy.
The finish is essentially just a roll up with the biggest tight grab you could ever possibly imagine.
No, you're not doing this justice. I knew I should have done it
myself. I'm not. You go to town.
Fucking Mikey Ripper goes for a sunset flip pin. Austin refuses to go down with it. So what does Mikey do? He fucking moons him. And Austin's just like, what the hell? Like, you could see it in his face. He's like, what the fuck? And his ass is
just
out.
Pulls
the
that
whole
man's
crowd,
pants down.
The crowd is just seeing just pale white ass cheeks.
Yep.
And you could see it on the way down when he gets the reversal up because the ass is just right in Mikey's face to the point where he has to like pick himself up and kind of like get around to get like a proper like driving pin on because he doesn't want to see Austin's ass that close to him. He gets the three count, gets the win, retains his title, and Austin is just like, what the hell just happened?
What the fuck just happened? And Austin then clotheslines Mikey half to death after this.
Yeah.
Now, do you know the impact that Mikey Whipwreck has on Stone Cold's career?
I do not. Go ahead.
The Stone Cold Stunner is a variation of Mikey Whipwreck's finisher.
Oh!
So it wasn't like the Diamond Cutter necessarily or anything like that. People think that where Austin got this from is, so Mikey Whipwreck had a finisher called the Whippersnapper, which he did with his left hand and was like a drop-down cutter. And Austin then, like having worked with Whipwreck, like essentially would variate the move, adding the kick and using his right arm instead to form the Stone Cold Stunner. So okay. Whipwreck might have been instrumental in one of the best finishing moves of all time. The one that all of our older siblings have hit on us. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listen, the Stone Cold Stunner is iconic. It just is. Like, it needs the boot. It needs the kick. I hated the early variation of it in the WWF when he would just do regular stunner, which I'm going to have to watch, I assume, a couple of times in the next episode. But like,
probably, yeah.
Man, there's nothing better than like the just middle fingers in your face, boot to this gut, stunner, talking shit, just rubbing his face all over your face, and then he pins you, and it's a three count, and Stone Cold has his beers, and I just love everything about this, and I can't wait for Stone Cold Steve Austin to come to our screen. Evan, tell the people when we get to that.
Next week, we will be dropping the next episode of Stone Cold Steve Austin. This one takes place entirely in the WWF. We're looking at him when he was still the ringmaster, technically, when he was still becoming Steve Austin, with a Caribbean strap match against Savio Vega. We're going to look at some of his most famous matches of all time. We're talking WrestleMania 13 versus Bret. And really the birth of the anti-hero Stone Cold Steve Austin. We're looking at the 316 promo.
Yeah.
We are hitting some absolutely legendary things in the next episode. So you're going to want to listen to the next episode as well, because it's going to be just more quality Stone Cold. It's going to be the Stone Cold you know. This was like the Stone Cold you might not have heard of, you might not have seen before, you know, New Japan, the Hollywood Blondes you might have heard of.
Stunning Steve Austin. Who the fuck
exactly.
is that?
We're getting a bunch of stuff you might not have seen. So next week, we're really diving into the Austin you probably know. And then in week three, which is like when he was the face of wrestling, he was the most popular star.
Yeah.
He's on
literally,
Nash
quite
Bridges.
Literally the most popular superstar in the history of the pro wrestling.
We're looking
business.
At matches against, like, we're looking at his series against The Rock and some other legendary matches in that. So, you know, stay tuned for the next couple of weeks of matches. They're going to be excellent. What did you learn looking at, old school Steve Austin before Stone Cold?
Man, I learned about ECW Austin, which I generally like. I'd heard of the promo. I've always seen like video cuts of the promo, but I've never actually heard the entire thing myself. So that was honestly just one of those things I'm really happy to actually get into because it's so good.
It's really good.
You know, I learned about Mikey Whipwreck. I don't know anything about the guy. Now I know about him. Good on him. It's one of those things like. I knew about Stunning Steve Austin. I saw a lot of Stunning Steve Austin matches. You know, I saw the stuff with the Dangerous Alliance. I saw his stuff, a lot of his stuff with the Hollywood Blondes. Thank you, 2K16, for that.
Yeah, truly. That 2K16 mode was huge.
Yeah, it was. It really got me into the early stages of Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, in his earlier runs when he was just Steve Austin. You know, that like nowadays, you know, I'm as Stone Cold. Like, I say Stone Cold, and then you're immediately like, yeah, Steve Austin, Steve Williams, whatever the hell you want to call him. Then he wasn't that. And he was a mid-carder. And it's crazy to think of because, like, even in this episode, I'm looking at Stone Cold. And it's like, I don't view him as a mid-carder. I don't view him as an undercard guy. I'm not thinking about him as a tag team guy.
In the lens
guy.
Of what we know about him now.
Like, I'm thinking about him as, like, yeah, this is the greatest star in the history of pro wrestling.
The guy.
Like, yeah.
This is the absolute fucking stud.
And it's so crazy to me because, like, I'm seeing it. Like, I could see that from this, like, here. And I just don't see how a guy like Eric Bischoff, who, you know, he had the idea of the NWO. He had these ideas that were money in. Yeah, 98 fucking weeks they were on top of the WWF. Or whatever it was, 83 weeks?
83. You're right.
It doesn't matter. Like, they were up for that long. And he couldn't see it with the biggest star in the history of pro wrestling?
We've all made mistakes, but that one hurts. That one hurts.
That one literally tanked their company.
But also, you think about it. Austin doesn't exist in the way that he exists when we know without his greatest foil, Mr. McMahon.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to
so excited.
Right at the end of the next episode. That wraps up this episode. Javier, where can people find you on social media?
I'm on the Twitter machine at JMelloSports. Wrestling is a thing that I do sometimes, but really just follow me. I'm going to be talking a lot about my hatred of Obi Toppin over the next couple of months. So, yeah.
I knew you were going to mention Obi Toppin. I absolutely knew that you were going to mention Obi Toppin there. Follow me on Twitter at It7Gomes, ITSEVANGOMES. It's a lot of random nonsense, but
it really
it's
is.
Decent nonsense. Yeah. It's a wide range of topics.
Send out an Obi Toppin tweet. Fuck it.
I will join you in your Obi Toppin crusade. Follow the podcast on Twitter at Crossbody of Work, and also email the podcast if you have ideas for who we should cover after we're finished with Steve Austin. CrossbodyWorkPod@gmail.com is how you get in touch with us. This was good, fun times. I'm glad we're back. It's
yes,
good to be back.
The boys are back
recording
in town.
The pod. The boys are back. Javier, any last words for the people?
Black Lives Matter. Keep fighting. Good fight, everybody.
We will see you next week for the Rise of Stone Cold.